We're live at EXT with Sarah McQuaid. Sarah, thank you for stopping by.
Oh, thank you so much, Chris. It's lovely to meet you.
So you have this new album with a great long title. If we dig any deeper, it could get dangerous.
Yeah.
That's a title.
Yeah. It's actually something I heard myself saying to my son. He was digging this great big hole in our back garden, and I looked out to see how he was getting on, and I couldn't actually see him until I walked out and went right up next to the hole and looked down into it, and there he was still digging. And I said, Eli, if you dig any deeper, it could get dangerous. And as soon as the words left my mouth, I just thought, oh man, there's a song. I've got to write a song, because all these lovely kind of layers of metaphorical meaning started suggesting themselves. And yeah, it wound up being the title track of the album.
That's fabulous. How tall is he?
Well, he was, I think, let me think, when I wrote the song, he's 50 now, so when I wrote the song, he would have been 12. So pretty tall, you know.
That was a pretty deep
Not
hole.
As tall as he is now. He's taller than me now, which is really hard to get used to, you know, when your kids outstrip you. It's like, oh man.
One of the first things I did when we discovered you is read up about you. And a lot of people liken you to Nick Drake and to Sandy Denny, which certainly must feel great to hear that from. But are they on your list of favorite artists?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I love Sandy Denny's voice. Nobody else sounds like Sandy Denny, and nobody else can sound like Sandy Denny. You know, she was a one-off. And so is Nick Drake. But what I really love about Nick Drake's music is the way, with his music, the guitar kind of takes on equal importance with the voice. It's like his songs are like a duet for guitar and voice. And that's kind of what I try and do myself. And I remember I was so happy one time, the first time, it's happened a few times since, but the first time I walked off stage and a woman came up at the merch table and she said, I was just thinking, you are like the female Nick Drake. And I was like, thank you. It's really nice to hear.
Who else would be on that list of favorite artists?
You know, I have a lot of favorite artists that I don't think I'm anything like. Like, my favorite singer of all time is Ella Fitzgerald. You know, and again, she's a one-off. Nobody can sound like her, and I wouldn't even try. But I try, even if I don't have a voice that sounds like Ella Fitzgerald's voice, I try and sing the way she sings, in the sense that when Ella sings, it's so accurate. She hits every note like spot on. And this is back before the days of autotune, you know. If she was hitting the note, she was hitting the note. Also, she really, you feel like she's really feeling the songs when she sings them. And I try and do that too. I try and kind of live every song as I'm singing that. And I learned that from Ella Fitzgerald. But I listen to all kinds of music. I mean, I listen to Led Zeppelin. I listen to the Bach cello suites. I listen to Miles Davis. You know, I like Kaki King's guitar playing. I think she's amazing. It's really nice to see another female guitarist out there, you know, so wildly eclectic.
It's interesting to hear you list a very eclectic bunch of people, because while you may not think you're actually sounding like these people, you definitely are being influenced by them. This record of yours is quite eclectic. How would you say this is your fifth record, right?
Mm-hmm.
How would you say this falls into the rest of your catalog? Because it seems a little different and a little experimental in some sense as well.
Yeah, I feel like it's a real step forward. I mean, I'm proud of all the albums I've made. I feel like I can listen back to all of them and say, oh yeah, yeah, that was good. I did all right there, you know. I would feel like I was stagnating as a musician if I didn't move forward with every album. And I've taken a lot of forward steps with this one. I've taken on some new instruments. That's thanks both to Michael Chapman, who produced the new album, and to my manager, Martin Stansbury, Martin had been needling me for ages to do something with the piano, because piano was actually my first instrument. I played piano before guitar, but I never thought of piano as an instrument that I would write or perform on. And Martin had been saying it for ages. And then I guess it was after Michael Chapman got me playing electric guitar. He sent me his own electric guitar in the mail. You know, he phoned up one day, he said, I need your address. I'm going to UPS you my electric guitar. I want you to write some songs on it. So after I'd started writing on electric, and that already kind of opened me out a little bit, then I thought, you know what, maybe I should finally take Martin's advice as well and write something on the piano as well. So it's been a real revelation for me, and I've been touring with all these new instruments as well. Up till last January, I had never played any instrument but acoustic guitar in public. And now I'm playing acoustic and electric guitars. I'm playing piano. I'm playing the drum, which is not an instrument I thought I would ever take up. So it's been really exciting. And I do feel like I've taken a big leap, which is nice.
We're live at EXT with Sarah McQuaid. Her record is called If We Dig Any Deeper, It Could Get Dangerous. Well, let's get a little dangerous. Let's have you play a couple of songs for us today. What would you like to start with?
I'd like to start with a song called Cot Valley. Cot Valley is a place that's really near to where I live in West Cornwall. And it's this beautiful area now that you can go for walks and it's lovely. But a couple of hundred years ago, it was a tin mine and it would have been really grim and depressing. And I found out that as of the 1840s, 20% of the workforce in Cornish tin and copper mines were children. And in 1842, the English Parliament passed this thing called the Mines and Collieries Act, which stated that from then on, no child under the age of 10 could work underground. So children under the age of 10 could still work above the ground. And they mostly had the job of working on these furnaces called calciners that heated up the tin ore to extract the arsenic from it. Because arsenic was this really valuable byproduct of the tin mining process. And then when they were 10, they could be sent to work underground. So I decided to write a song about how lucky I feel to be living now. I mean, sometimes we think times are bad, but actually times are really good compared to how they used to be. We just don't know how lucky we are.
So much has changed in my lifetime, and mostly for the best. Even when the morning news is frightening, it doesn't set me yearning for the past. And there's a valley near my home, where children run among the stars. Instead of giving up their lives for copper and tin, Cot Valley is green today, where the slag heaps used to smolder. Now a child is free to wander, and I know things could be better, but we've come a long, long way. There was a time when choice was something made for us by others, some the pick and shovel, some the sword, and some the veil. No difficult decisions, no surprises to discover. Just take the road that's laid for you and hope it treats you well. And for far too many children, that's still the way it happens. The cards you're dealt are all you have to play. La da da da. Da 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 da. The valley as it is now, and not the way it was before. I'm glad we don't send children down the mines now, to set them burning arsenic for more. I go there with my daughter, the world is open to her. she can gaze out at the sea and watch her dreams. Julian caught Valley is green today, where the sleigh keeps used to smolder. Now a child is free to wander, and I know things could be better, but we've come a long, long way. God Valley is green today.
This is Sarah McQuaid, and you've left regular radio behind. You're listening to Exit 97.7 WEXT.
That's a beautiful song, Time to Love.
Ah, thank you. I co-wrote that one with Jerry O'Byrne, a wonderful Irish singer-songwriter. And Jerry produced my first three albums. And he did a really beautiful job of producing them and playing on them. But both of us kind of felt like it was time for me to work with some different producers and, you know, kind of broaden my musical horizons a little bit. But I also wanted to have the continuity because I'd been working with Jerry for so long. And he's such a great artist and great musician and great songwriter. And I asked him if he would co-write with me initially for the fourth album. We had to co-write by email because he was in Ireland and I was in England. And so we had to send MP3s and bits of lyrics back and forth. And we got there and I was really happy with the result. I asked him to do the same thing again for the new album, and Time to Love is the one that we came up with.
We're live at EXT with Sarah McQuaid. The new album is called If We Dig Any Deeper, It Could Get Dangerous. And you did move off to work with some other producers, including on this new one, Michael Chapman.
Yeah.
Wow.
Such an honor. Such an honor. He's such a great musician and has been a real musical hero of mine for a long time. It was very intimidating, actually. When I first met him, we were both playing at this festival in England, the Village Pump Festival, and I got up my courage to actually go up and talk to him. We got chatting, and then it turned out he and his wife and myself and Martin were all staying in the same hotel. So we all had breakfast together in the morning. And at the time, I was actually just heading away to do a U.S. tour. And I found out that Michael's wife, Andrew, who's a knitwear designer, she was going to be exhibiting her stuff at a fashion show in Memphis. And I was heading to Memphis to do a gig, and we were amazingly going to be there at the same time. So Andrew Chapman, Michael's wife, came to my gig in Memphis. And I think that is actually the biggest reason that Michael's producing my new album, because I think Andrew has a very strong influence on Michael. Because the next thing that happened after that was she and Michael organized a gig for me at a venue near to where they live, and Michael actually was my opening act. I got an email from Andrew saying, Michael was just wondering if he could do a short opening set for your gig. I was like, okay. It was a little backwards. We got to be friends, and he actually offered to produce the new album, and that was just amazing. And I, of course I said yes. What could I say?
And what would you say might be the biggest takeaway that you learned working with Michael on this new record?
Well, I mean, he's got me playing electric guitar, which is a big step forward for me. I never would have imagined that I would be interested in playing electric guitar. I've always been an acoustic guitar head. I've always kind of worshipped acoustic guitars and guitar makers and everything, and never occurred to me to even try playing electric until Michael said, try this. And once I tried it, it just was mind-boggling, the whole world of possibilities that had opened. And the material that I wrote for the new album on that electric guitar, I would not have written on acoustic guitar. The songs came out of the guitar. They're songs, they're in sort of styles that I couldn't have achieved that with an acoustic. That's just been amazing right there. And he's also I've still got his guitar on long-term loan. I thought I was going to have to give it back at the end of the recording, but he said, oh, why don't you hang on to it? And I was so glad, because it's a beautiful instrument. That was a massive, massive takeaway right there. And just working with him, it's been a boost to my confidence, I think I've always worked with really high caliber people. I've been lucky that way. And every time you do, it just makes you think, okay, you know, maybe if somebody like that actually wants to work with me, maybe I'm doing the right thing.
We're live at EXT with Sarah McQuaid. I think you are. I love your guitar playing. I think it's great. How did you learn how to play?
Well, my mother taught me initially when I was about 8 years old. She taught me how to play piano as well. I started on piano when I was about 3. She would always play her guitar. Like, my earliest memories are lying in bed and listening to her play the guitar and sing in the next room. And so as soon as I was big enough to hold a guitar, I got her to show me how to play it. And she just showed me a few things, and then I was kind of away. After that, I was just pretty much self-taught, just listening to records over and over again. I mean, this is back when I was like 8. I had a Mickey Mouse record player, and I used to put on my mother's records by people like Joan Baez and, you know, Woody Guthrie and so on. And, you know, you had to keep moving the needle back, you know, and try and go, okay, how did they do that? How did they do that? And then I got a little older and got into Joni Mitchell. And that's what got me into playing in the alternative tunings, you know. Mm. And so then I was kind of trying to tune my guitar, trying to listen to what Joni Mitchell was doing and tune the guitar and figure that out, you know, and I just stayed with it.
The album is If We Dig Any Deeper, It Could Get Dangerous. Sarah McQuaid, thank you so much for stopping by.
Oh, thank you, Chris. It's been lovely chatting with you. Thank you.
Let's let folks know where you are online so they can follow along wherever you go.
Yeah, my main website is sarahmcquaid.com. That's SarahMcquaid.com. And if you go there, then you can see links to all the social media, the Twitter and the Instagram and the Facebook and YouTube. I've got lots of live video on YouTube, all that good stuff.
We're going to have you switch over to the drum for this last bit. Do you want to say anything about One Sparrow Down?
Yeah, it was inspired by my cat. My cat actually did some backing vocals on the new album with this song, and so did a pheasant.
So that's really your cat?
Yeah, that was really my cat. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was my cat. I actually recorded her into my phone and then gave the phone recordings to Martin, who did the engineering for the album, and he managed to get her onto the album. And he also went outside the studio and recorded a pheasant. There was this pheasant wandering around who was kind of making a lot of noise all through the recording, really trying hard to contribute to the album. And so we thought we'd give him his wish. So I got the cat and the pheasant and all kinds of, on the album track, all kinds of random percussion and stuff. I had a great percussionist, Roger Luxton, and he did stuff with a wine bottle and an oven grill and all sorts, you know. That was Michael's idea, actually, the oven grill. He went out back of the studio and pulled out this old oven and said, try this. And so when I do the song live with an audience, I try and get the audience involved doing some backing percussion and animal noises. You know, I tell them it doesn't have to be cats and pheasants. I get all kinds of things. I was down in South Carolina earlier this week, and I had one audience member deliver what I was told was the mating call of the bull alligator. I don't know, because I've never heard the mating call of the bull alligator, but that's what he said it was. It was an interesting sound. So it's always fun. I never know what's going to happen with this one.
That's great. Sarah, thank you.
Thank you so much, Chris. Thanks for having me.
There's a sparrow at my window, and he's spoiling for a fight. He's attacking his reflection, he's puffing out with pride. Doesn't see the cat who's watching from the windowsill inside. She stares at him intently with her gorgeous golden eyes, while he flaps and struts and chatters in a futile exercise. He can't banish the invader, though he tries and tries and tries. He could have built himself a nest instead of battling the stranger, but the image in the windowpane is all that seems to matter. It's his enemy and nemesis to hate and fear forever. The cat is plump and glossy, she's prepared to bide her time, till the sparrow falls exhausted to the ground. And then she stands and stretches out her back and takes herself outside. She pads across the grass to find him. She never makes a sound. One Sparrow Town.
This is Sarah McQuaid. Thank you for being a member of WEXT.